Good afternoon. This is Jack Marks with Wall Street Reporter, and today I'm speaking with Dr. John Ambrosio. He's the CEO of Coherent, Inc., and the stock symbol is COHR on NASDAQ. John, thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Jack.
Well, let's start off with talking about what some of Coherent's key products are and how they're used by your customers.
Sure. I guess I'll start by giving you a brief description of the businesses that we're in. Coherent is a provider of photonic solutions. Photonics is the merger of three disciplines. It's lasers, electronics, and optics. We put those together in a variety of different ways to serve customers in commercial applications as well as research applications. And historically, the commercial business has been the larger part of our practice, and the scientific piece has been the smaller. In terms of the commercial markets that we serve, there are essentially three verticals that we talk about. One is instrumentation. You can think about this as devices that are used for bioinstrumentation, blood analysis, DNA sequencing, et cetera, as well as medical therapeutics. So this would be vision correction, treatments of diseases of the eye, skin treatment, et cetera. The second vertical is microelectronics. These are products that are used for a wide variety of manufacturing processes that support consumer electronics. So our technology is embedded in, for example, mobile touchscreen displays, flat panel displays, computer chips, cellular technology, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously a growing practice in solar cell technology as well. The third vertical is what we call materials processing, and this is a market that serves a wide range of applications from automotive and aerospace to product security and safety. So you can think about this as date codes and security seals, trace numbers on a wide range of products that we use in our daily lives. And then the scientific piece is really the hair on fire kind of business for us. These are university researchers. At some level, they're all chasing or pushing the frontiers of science. We count a wide range of Nobel laureates amongst our customer base. So it's really about pushing the technology forward to enable people to push the frontiers of science forward. In terms of what products are important to us, for the commercial markets, we're really driving the whole cost of ownership model and performance model across these markets. If you think about what customers are looking for, every successive generation of technology has to address one or more critical aspects. It has to increase their throughput. It has to increase resolution. It has to improve yield. It has to reduce cost. And most customers are looking for one or more of those in every successive generation in technology. So as we push that technology forward, whether it's a solid-state laser, whether it's a semiconductor laser, whether it's a carbon dioxide laser, whether it's a fiber laser, it's all about how do you drive this matrix approach so that each generation of technology provides higher and higher value to the customer and allows Coherent to capture higher and higher value in return.
So it seems like your lasers are really used in so many different applications. I guess most consumers are probably not aware of exactly, where your product is used.
It's a very good point, and I think what's really telling is that people run into products or use products that are made with lasers and many times with our lasers every single day and don't even know it. So if you're using a touchscreen display, as I mentioned, and mobile touchscreen displays is the one area of display technology that's growing right now, and that's based on the success of the Apple iPhone as well as competitive product offerings. If you're driving a car that has airbags, those have been cut and welded using lasers. Certainly, the explosion in the internet and the ability to continue to push microprocessors and memory, computer memory forward, would not be possible without laser technology. If you own a flat-screen television, we're behind that as well.
So getting back to, let's say the touchscreen display, where does Coherent fit into that picture?
So there's a piece of the manufacturing process when you're making a touchscreen where you're actually attaching and creating the grid on the back of the screen that picks up the signal, the pressure signal from your finger, that the laser is used to manufacture.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so let's talk about like the sort of the current state of the laser market. Like, what are where do you see the growth potential, and how do you see Coherent capitalizing on this? What's
Well, you know, if you
been happening in the market?
sure, if you look at the photonics industry over sort of a 5 or a 10 year period, what you see is a market that has grown probably at twice GDP on average. Coherent has done a little bit better than that. Our commercial business has grown over the 5 years ending in September of 2008. The commercial business was growing in excess of a 10% CAGR over a 5 year period. And that really highlights the fact that the adoption is taking place as we're pushing laser technology into newer markets or new markets where the legacy mechanical solutions really have just run out of room or have run out of flexibility. That model is likely to continue. You know, you'll see more laser content in the manufacturing of automobiles in the future. You'll see more laser content in textiles manufacturing. You'll see more laser content in a variety of medical diagnostics and therapeutics. These things are creating value for the consumer by making devices more reliable, less expensive, and easier to use. And I think touchscreen displays, as I mentioned, is one example of that. Those are technologies that are enabled by lasers. We think that the growth is going to come not only from greater use in the existing markets, but as we continue to drive this cost of ownership curve to lower and lower levels. And it doesn't mean that we're driving prices down in any kind of a spiral fashion, because when you look at cost of ownership, you have to look at a number of things, including the acquisition price, but operating costs, reliability, service intervals, all of those things go into the cost of ownership. As we get smarter about driving that down, we will, in fact, increase the adoption in adjacent markets where today the cost of ownership simply won't support deployment, and that's something that that occurs over time. So I think as the markets recover to more normalized levels, certainly the indicators are that more and more users will be looking to laser technology as a viable solution that 5 years ago, for a variety of reasons, would never have considered it.
Mm-hmm. So who are first, let me ask you, have you seen an impact, from the current recession on spending by some of your industrial customers?
So clearly, the laser industry today is far more reliant on consumer spending as the ultimate driver than it ever has been in its history. So there has been a significant impact, and commercial markets in particular have been hit from sort of 20% for certain niches within the commercial market, and we've seen some of our competitors have 50 and 60% impacts on their business. So we have not escaped this downturn by any stretch of the imagination. I think the approach on how to manage this has varied from company to company, and I think Coherent has done as good or perhaps a better job than most in responding to the current economic environment.
So let me ask you two things. One is, How is Coherent responding, and are you seeing any stabilization or pickup in orders?
Sure. Interestingly, when we felt the effect on Lehman Monday, and as the credit market started to contract, we started to see customers rethinking their own needs and deployment, et cetera. What that has led to in certain markets, obviously, is a pullback in demand. Some customers are, aggressively burning off inventory right now. Others are trying to manage it on a more consistent basis. I would say that the most prevalent thing that we see is customers buying smaller or placing smaller orders than they have historically and shorter term orders than they have historically. And this was a situation where we had customers that were placing 1 year orders, and they would have a call off to have deliveries over a 1 year period, are now going to 6 to 12 week orders. So they're really trying to manage their inventory very aggressively, and it's a means of preserving cash. In terms of stabilization, during the last conference call, which was for the March quarter, we announced that we felt that we were near a bottom. I think the greater question is not whether we're near the bottom. It's, you know, what does the vector look like going forward? And I would say our visibility is as good as any of the pundits that are out there, that we see things starting to improve from a customer dialogue standpoint. Certainly, there's been a tremendous amount of re-engagement from the customers on talking about new applications, new technologies, et cetera, that is going to translate into business in the future. Whether that translation takes place in 3, 6, 12 months is still difficult to say, but the customers have gotten back into the process, and that certainly couldn't be said in the December quarter as they were really struggling with what's happening to my business and, you know, what am I going to look like going forward.
Now, what is the competitive landscape like right now? Like, who are your key competitors, and is this something where people are growing through, new business, or is there a question of, you know, taking market share? Like, what is that situation like?
So, you know, the competitive landscape really varies by end market, because there's no one that has the market penetration or product portfolio, in short, the diversification that Coherent has. So depending on the end market, we compete with different people. And I won't go through market by market, but, you know, some of our competitors would be Newport Corporation, Rofe and Senar, GSIG, a little bit of JDSU, and those are some of the more common competitors, all NASDAQ-listed companies. And then there's a variety of smaller private companies that are in there as well. The landscape will change as we morph or continue to morph our competitive product offering, and others like IPG will start to move more into our competitive basket. I would say that in general, the competitors have behaved pretty rationally during this time frame. You know, I'm often asked if there's significant changes in price pressure, and the price pressure is always there. It hasn't gotten noticeably worse or more demanding, and I think it's because everybody is dealing with the same set of challenges, that in a compressed environment, you have to figure out how to best run your business, and creating a price war is not necessarily the best way to do that, because you're just denying yourself the opportunity to capture some value. So there's been a lot of rationale in pricing. Selective basis, of course, we see people doing foolish things, but those are readily manageable. In terms of,
nobody's,
you know, what
desperate.
Well, I would say that, you know, many of the companies are in decent cash positions. I don't think anybody is in as strong a cash position as we are, but they're in a sustainable cash position, and as a consequence, they're trying to behave rationally, because I think we all understand it's relatively easy to take prices down. It's much harder to bring prices back up as the market recovers.
Right. Now, let's talk about, like, which of your products or categories do you see as having the most growth potential?
Well, you know, it's interesting, because we have good opportunities in the instrumentation business, which has historically been a strong growth business. We think that's going to come back, and strong growth is, you know, a 10 to 15% growth opportunity. Microelectronics oftentimes gets misunderstood. You know, people think of it as semicap, and while there's a piece of semicap in there, there are all these other markets. For example, the solar market, the flat panel market, we see lots of growth in both of those areas, or growth potential in both of those areas. As you move into new technologies, you know, for example, in flat panel display, it could be OLED deployment that drives a pretty significant upside opportunity. And obviously, there's a lot of interest in renewable energy. We tend to talk about it as solar, because that's what people are most familiar with. But, you know, the whole idea of renewable energy and storage of that renewable energy are going to be growth drivers for this industry as the market continues to recover. And then the last piece is materials processing. This is a market that we've been present in for a number of years, but really at the low end of the market. And recently at a major trade show in Germany, we introduced a suite of solutions for the high power end of that market that has the effect of increasing our SAM in a pretty meaningful way. It's, you know, probably a $300 or $400 million market opportunity that we're now targeting, and it's one that we haven't been present in before. And we think that the solution set that we brought out is actually pretty compelling because it's a technology agnostic approach. We really want to be able to have a discussion with the customer around what best meets their needs, regardless of what the solution is, and we believe that we're going to be able to supply that. So we've added a third leg to the stool, so to speak.
Okay. So this sounds pretty interesting. Can you sort of talk a little bit more about that, what you're doing in this area? And
sure. So, you know, I use the term high power and low power, and if you equate it to a light bulb, this would be, you know, the low power, you think about a 25-watt light bulb, and a high power light bulb would be a kilowatt. So the kind of lights that they use to light a sports stadium. And this is a very rough illustration, but, you know, if you just think about the sheer power, that's probably a reasonable way to imagine it. And, you know, we've historically been in the low power range with a good suite of solutions. The high power market we have been out of for a variety of reasons. There was some intellectual property that we couldn't get a license to or couldn't get around. That's expired. There were some new technologies that were coming out, particularly around fiber lasers, that we thought were interesting. But the challenge that we were seeking to overcome is really how to change the cost dynamic of fiber lasers to make them even more attractive to the marketplace. And we invested in organic R&D over, you know, an 18-month period or so. And we've brought out a series of solutions that are based on carbon dioxide lasers, on fiber lasers, and direct diode lasers to go into the cutting, welding, heat treating, cladding, brazing markets. These are all industrial applications that are used for everything for reconditioning parts for power plants to cutting and welding for automotive and aerospace applications to the high-speed printing applications. So, you know, it's really a very broad solution set that is intended to attract customers across a number of different end markets. And for us, it's always important. These are high-powered lasers. And it's always important for us that we have multiple applications that we can address rather than a single application to address.
So you're saying, if I understand correctly, that the high-powered laser is a new market you're getting into, and when you say $400 million, that's roughly doubling.
That's the size of the market opportunity for these high-power lasers.
Okay.
And, you know, clearly we're not going to capture 100% market share. We're going to capture a piece of that market, but it does represent an interesting growth opportunity for the company. In addition to that, we also showed it at the Munich show a tool that is used for solar cell process development, and it's one of the first times that the first time in a very long time that Coherent has shown a tool capability. Now, this is a process development tool. It's not intended to be a production tool, but it is an approach that we're taking to help the adoption of laser technology in solar cell fabrication. And the feedback on that has been quite good. You know, we've shipped our first units already, and they're actually being used on pilot lines. And what we've told the marketplace is that you know, our intent is to deploy them for development purposes, and if somebody wants to deploy it in a full production environment, you know, we would work with an integrator who has the ability to not only build but also support a large base of these devices. And that's adding yet another dimension. So, in short, what we've taken advantage of during this downturn is to update and further grow our product portfolio to address some new market opportunities. And as the market recovers, you know, it is enhancing the positioning of the company. And on top of that, we've also, over the past couple of years, been doing a fairly substantial amount of work around a footprint realignment that is nearing completion. The vast majority of it will be done by September of this year. And over the course of this project, which was actually started ahead of of the downturn that we saw that came last September, over the course of this project, we've eliminated or will eliminate roughly 40% of our operating footprint globally. Went from 12 sites, we'll go down to about 8 sites. It's going from 1.3 million square feet of space down to about 800,000 square feet of space. And attendant with that was a reduction in headcount, obviously, as we've outsourced things and consolidated things, as well as the response that we've made to the economic environment is about a 20-plus percent reduction in headcount. So this is all in. The structural changes are about $34 to $37 million of permanent cost reduction. And in addition to that, we've taken a number of temporary measures to manage through this this current environment.
Okay, so that's actually a pretty significant reduction in your fixed cost. What now? Talking about the financial picture, your top line revenues are in the $500 million range right now.
They're actually trending a little bit down on a trailing 12-month basis. That's probably correct, but bookings are trending down towards the $90 to $100 million a quarter range right now. And I think as you project forward, you have to look at a different revenue level than we've seen historically until the market starts to recover.
Okay, and the earnings also have fluctuated significantly over the last, I guess, 4 years or so. Like, what's behind that, and how do you see that stabilizing or going?
I'm sorry, the earnings have fluctuated over the – what was the time frame that you said?
I was looking at around, I guess it's about 3-4 years.
So over the past few years, we've had a number of events that have affected the GAAP earnings. For example, all of the footprint work that we're doing, there are one-time charges that are associated with that. We've been calling all of that out in our guidance. If you look at the pro forma numbers, I think you see a pretty different picture of a bit more consistency. But more importantly, what you see in the numbers trending forward is you really see the impact of taking all this cost out. I mean, if I compare March of 2009 with March of 2008, I think in March in 2008 we had roughly $156 million of revenue. In March of 2009, I think it was 105-ish. The gross profit, the pro forma gross profit a year ago was 43.7. This quarter we called it out at 40.6. And I'm going from memory. I don't have the numbers right in front of me.
Okay.
But included in the March 2008 numbers was about $2 million of inventory provision because, you know, companies should do in this environment, they should look at their inventory levels and make sure that they have the right provisions against it. So we had about $2 million of inventory provision in this year's March quarter, which is about 200 bips. So if you compare March of 08 versus March of 09 and you adjust for the inventory provision, you have a 43.7 versus I think it was 42.8 on an adjusted basis, on a third less revenue. The only way that you can sustain that kind of performance is by making all of these underlying changes that I was talking about to really help you manage the gross margin picture. So when all this work is done, and as I said, the vast majority of it will be completed by September, you'll see a more normalized run rate that doesn't have all these restructuring charges in it, which is very important because transparency for shareholders is absolutely critical. So we're reaching the end of all of that work.
Uh-huh. Okay, so this is essentially September is kind of the company's going forward in a new way.
In September of 09, we will have finished all of the footprint projects, save one, and we've disclosed all of this already. That last project will be completed over the course of fiscal 2010, but it'll be small enough that it'll not have a significant impact on GAAP versus pro forma earnings.
Okay.
This year, we've eliminated so many sites during this year, and even starting last year as we were initiating the work, there were a lot of restructuring charges included in that.
Okay. So, what would you say? Do you believe that the investor community fully understands the coherent story? And if not, what would you say they're missing?
I would say that, from the standpoint of the investor community, what do they see? They see a company that has a historical position as a market leader. They see a company that historically has been a very strong cash generator and continues to be a strong cash generator. They see a company that has, avowed technology leadership, which for a tech company is always something that you want to have because that's one of your key differentiators. But what they're seeing now or what we're telling them now is that we're really working on the operating model because we want to have financial leadership in addition to all these other leadership positions that we have, and that we're getting very near the point of having all this major work completed. And, as the market starts to return, we expect to see some pretty good leverage on the bottom line. When we started the Footprint Project, we had guided for 19% to 23% EBITDA exiting fiscal 2010. Now, that was based on a revenue assumption of historical CAGRs, which was, 8%+. Clearly, with the market pullback, the revenue numbers and the mix is going to be different than we had originally anticipated. But by taking $34 to $37 million out, if I compare that to 2008 numbers, and I realize that this is a little hard probably for people to follow, but if you say $34 to $37 million on $600 million in revenue, that's 5.5% to 6.2%, 6.3% of impact on operating income. We finished 2008 with a pro forma EBITDA in the 13.5%, somewhere in that vicinity. So if you add 5.5% to 6% on that, it really puts you up in the lower end of the range that we had guided to. But we had guided on much higher revenues than $600 million. So you can really see how the impact will flow through as revenue starts to come back. And I think for many people, because we've had all of these one-time charges flowing through, unless they actually go in and do the work and understand everything that's going on, it's hard to have that kind of visibility. So I think the average investor may be missing that if they're not looking at the story behind what's been driving the GAAP earnings.
Okay, so essentially the real, I guess, the value driver here for investors is is going to be the results of this footprint project that you've been talking about, which I guess your earnings are going to start to see the benefits of that in September then.
So let me put it a little bit differently. Of the $34 to $37 million of structural change, a good chunk of the headcount component to that is already in the numbers, but the footprint piece, which was estimated to be 11.5% to 14.5% of that $34 to $37 million, so roughly a third. In the March quarter, there was only $3 million on a run rate basis of that 11.5% to 14.5% in the numbers.
Okay.
So as we go through in the June quarter, we closed another major site. In the June quarter, that was done slightly ahead of schedule and somewhat under budget. Those numbers start to flow in. In the September quarter, we have two additional sites that will close. Those numbers will be flowing in as well. So as you move into the first quarter of fiscal 10, which is December, you'll start to see the full benefit of all of these projects going into the numbers. So there is a timing effect here as to when all of these benefits kick in, but the projects are being done on time and on budget as we had originally communicated to the marketplace, despite the fact that we've seen all of this economic uncertainty. We've continued to push forward with these projects, and yes, we believe that those benefits will start to show themselves. But it is critically important that we start to see revenue recovery to capture the full benefit of those moves.
Sure. Now, is there anything else you wanted to add?
I think we've pretty much covered it.
Okay, great. Well, John, thank you for joining us, and I'm sure our investor audience looks forward to following your progress in the months ahead.
My pleasure, Jack. Thanks for the time.
Thank you.